Welcome to Aliens, UFO, and Beyond, and I'm Rene Chavez, and we got, you know, Joel Montaldo was just sitting in for Christina, not exactly in the same shape, but, you know.
Much sexier, by the way, but anyway.
You're going to
kill my
head. Yeah, like the fur on the face, yeah.
That's right. Hey, man, it's nice and soft, man, but, you know, anyway. It's, you know, anyway, we'll leave that alone.
Yeah.
Where somebody starts writing into us.
But, yeah, she's on her way to San Diego, to taking some time off and having some time with some friends and family. So, warning, she is listening. So we have to be very, very careful. And Christina says she is much more sexy than Joe.
All right, we went through this with Stephanie one time, and by the way, I won, just so you know ahead of time. The poll's still up on the website, by the way. I won by like 4,000 votes, too. And, well, God, if she's listening, she'll be calling into the show. I agree you are, baby. I lie, you're much sexier than I am. But we have a friend of mine in the queue, Jason Wilson, who I've been knowing for longer than we should even probably admit to.
Hey, everybody.
It's probably not good to admit to it. But you know, by the way,
I like saying. Well, hey, Renee, or show host, whatever your name was. I'm sorry. I was just on the phone with Joe and ended up getting jumped into a show. So nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you too.
And he's the regular host here with Christina George, who how can we say this? Escampiated from another network. But anyway, it's and whoever just sent me that. No, we will not be talking about that tonight, and I will answer that in a text. We don't talk about that kind of stuff. That's kind of shit. Anyway, sorry, I had to address that because I didn't want to forget it later on tonight. It's, you know, I've been watching all this stuff. What was it? Remember just a couple weeks ago I posted it to the web. The guy who supposedly got killed by black magic. Where is it? In Europe, Scotland? Where the hell was it?
Something like that.
He was throwing up the black blood.
Right.
Now, this guy was a ufologist, by the way.
Right.
I posted this. The first day I posted it, like 36,000 people on the Facebook page just went away with it. And then the next day someone sends me another article about it, basically saying that the guy had discovered, I know, oh, trust me, I know that, baby. He's finally distracted. Anyway, they sent another article saying that this was, he had discovered a cult. And, it was black magic that actually killed me. So we all three sitting here, do you think black magic can actually kill somebody?
To me, I think, I don't know, I think it has to be, you know, like a person's belief, I guess. I mean, if they're, I don't know. I mean, I have seen some strange things that are, you know, that can't be really explained, but... You know, I haven't experienced it, so I can't really say, you know, per se myself. But you being in Louisiana, I'm pretty sure you've probably seen some interesting things
I've seen some spooky, scary ass stuff.
Well, I've got an opinion on the whole "can black magic actually hurt you" thing, and it's kind of here's an ambiguous yes and no. Well,
okay.
The no part of it, I believe, comes from "can black magic hurt you?" Only if you let it. And most people are in control of a little bit more than they actually believe, whether they're aware of it or not. You know, the yes comes in as, can black magic hurt you? Yes, it certainly can hurt you if you believe in it enough and give yourself some kind of crazy psychosomatic feedback that actually causes harm to you. But can it hurt you? Only if you let it. And pretty much if you're aware of it and have your guards and your defenses up, then no, you can't be. Now, if it's something you believe in, if you're really naive and you're really susceptible, yeah, I think you can essentially make a self-fulfilling prophecy and hurt yourself, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think you really have to be the one that kind of initiates it or fears it or however you want to look at it. I don't know. I've seen some scary crap down here. I ain't gonna
you
lie.
Know, that kind of goes in line with a lot of when you talk about when paranormal investigators, they're, you know, they are provoking a spirit and they're trying to get this answer from the spirit and they're cussing it out and, you know, telling it off. What do you think is actually going to happen? you're going to piss somebody off. It could be a human spirit, but he's going to be pissed off because you're there cussing him out. You know, what do you expect when you start getting scratches and so forth? Because a lot of times people say when you get a scratch, it's automatically, oh, it's demonic. And it's like, you know, you're going around pissing off spirits. What do you think is going to happen? You know, it's like going to somebody's house and you start telling them off. What do you think is going to happen when you go to somebody's house? You're going to get your butt knocked out. I'm telling you.
You know, the only thing, I don't even know if this is, if this was even paranormal or not, and Jason's heard me talk about the black thing before, but this is one of these things that gives you absolute fear, but yet the whole time you have the absolute fear, something in the back of your head saying, this isn't or can't be real. Because the fear is so intense. Because, you know, it's not that I haven't ever been scared. I haven't, I ain't gonna lie. And there's been a few times when we've been in places that, you know, I'm like, what am I doing here? But in general, not much. But this kind of fear was just unreal amount of fear. This was like someone had their foot on your neck with a 9mm in the back of your head kind of fear. You know, that you're like, what the? Then, you know, and I'll describe it real fast because I don't want to get into it too much, but, you know, we just seen something jump out of the forest, basically. We were on NASA. We was actually on a NASA base when this happened. NASA, the Stennis base, actually. And the blackness moved forward behind the car. And the only reason I even noticed it is because I had my foot on the brake because I was in a black car. And I have a foot on the brake, and the lights were on, so the light got brighter and wider as it approached the back of the car. And that's how I knew it was following us, because at different times you would see the light reflect at different ways. And I was cruising. I was in the middle of a swamp, cruising a good 80, 90, 100 miles an hour on a Nissan Stanza on an old gravel road through the swamp. And as I was coming to the end of the road, to the blacktop road, which is still in NASA, by the way, I hit the brakes and cut the wheel, so I kind of slid up to pop up on top of the blacktop and just kind of land. I mean, the car didn't actually get airborne. It just kind of slid up and just kind of rocked and stopped. But when it did, I hit the electric button on my window, stuck my gun out the window, and popped off a cap. Just pow. Now, the muzzle, because it's so dark out there, when the muzzle flash went, you could actually see the outline of something. And I'm going to say something because I don't know what the hell it was. But it stopped. I don't think it stopped actually because of the bullet or the gun. I think it stopped because of the flash of light. I ain't even going to lie. I don't know what else because the gun didn't even seem to phase it. So at that point, I put my hand back in the car, put the son of a bitch at low and just floored it till I got out of the swamp. Now, Jason's been back in his swamp with me. It's a weird place. But was it paranormal? Was it E.T.? Was it... I don't know what the hell it was. I really don't. I want to say it was somebody using it to scare us off. Maybe it was E.T. Maybe it was government. Whatever it was, it's an amount of fear. It's unreal.
Yeah, and there's something about that particular kind of fear, too, because, I mean, all of us have been in some kind of situation that, you know, quite honestly scared us, you know, with somebody
that
might be a different thing. You know, somebody might pull a gun on you or a knife on you or try to rob you, or you're driving down the road and all of a sudden somebody's heading at you in your lane. You know, there's that distinct situational type of fear and the response that comes along with it. Now, with the thing that Joe's talking about, with the black thing or, like, other types of, you know, weird paranormal high strangeness incidents like that, the fear you experience is a different kind of fear. It's not that situational, you know, crap's going down, you know, fight or flight, react or die kind of instinct that happens. It's a different kind of fear. It's more of a condition, more of a Pavlovian type of, like, deep ingrained fear. It's not anything particular in the situation that is giving you the heebie-jeebies. I mean, this is some deep instinctual shit from way back somewhere that you're afraid of this for a deep ingrained reason that goes beyond just, you know, a simple thrill scare or something like that. I mean, it's a different type of fear.
It is definitely. It's people have heard me talk about this at conferences, we have lectures on radio shows and other places, but this was almost crippling fear, almost.
Yeah.
But for some reason, the back of my head and just kept saying, no, it can't be real. Now, another younger Gregory Miller, his wife, Gia Scott, who used to host on the network, she's had this experience, I think it was in Mexico or Arizona. And I've talked to a few other people who have had this experience around the country and even outside the country, but no one can really put... And you know what's so funny about this black thing? This thing is all menacing, all freaky, all weird, but it never actually catches up with you. And it doesn't matter if you're in a car, on a bike, or on foot. It never actually seems to catch up with you. It gets real close, but not like enveloping kind of close.
Yeah.
It's weird. I hope no one. I hope none of y'all ever experienced it, because man, it freaked me out. I was like, I talked about it for like 3 weeks on air, and Jason, I couldn't shut up about the damn thing.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the situation that Christina talked about on the show plenty of times about the black eyed kids and black eyed adult. You know, being this investigator as she is, you know, the no fear thing. We've gone on investigations and we had no problems going into the dark places and stuff like that and going after whatever spirits, you know, whether you know they're human spirits or dark spirits or negative spirits. You know, it's part of what we do. But when she came across these black-eyed children, it was like a really such a big setback on herself that she fell back. And, you know, they kind of, you know, totally freaked her out. And it took her a while to realize, you know, what the heck am I doing? I'm an investigator. I shouldn't be doing this. Why am I running from this? You know, so she tries to go back out there to try to, you know, to confront it, to find these people again. But, you know, she didn't find them again. But, see, that kind of, it's like what you were saying about this kind of fear that just hits you in such a way. You know, we've heard stories about black-eyed children from all over the country. And, you know, you got hunters guys, you got law enforcement people, you know, big, strong guys, and they come across something like that, and all of a sudden they just felt this sudden fear just kind of go through their whole body, you know, and just kind of not have that control. So, yeah, you're right about that, about this kind of fear. We don't know how deep-seated it is, what actually causes it, and that's something, you know, a really good study to, you know, to get into. You know, is it a hidden fear, or is it the fear that they're projecting? We don't really have all the answers for that yet.
Well, I think...
Yeah, almost like you never knew, you didn't even know you were capable of feeling that type of fear.
Exactly.
At that moment.
It's I don't know, that you know, we've been in some scary, hairy places. We've had some weird crap go on. Jason and I and four other people got lost in the fog for 16 hours one night with little steps going in between us and the girls in the sand and weird things coming down pylons in a canopy next to, where was it, what the hell is it, Eglin Air Force Base. It's weird how shit happens. And we just went riding that night. We rented a pickup truck, an F-150, and crammed it full of people, and took off for Florida in the fog. And it was weird because literally it was 15, 16 hours of just fog. Jason and I both drove, so it was just weird. And then we went to Blue Mountain Beach, which is outside of Destin, Florida. So it's about 50 miles, 40 miles outside of Destin. And we got in a group and we kind of spread out into a circle. And we're all talking, it's foggy in the beach, and we're just standing there talking in a circle. And when you looked up, the sky was clear where the circle was, but only where the circle was.
And this is just a weird kind of fog, too, because no matter where you are and whatever kind of fog you're in, I mean, you know, when that sun comes out, you know, by 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, just about any fog should be more or less burnt off. And, you know, it wasn't overcast. It was just foggy. Like Joe said, you could look up and see clear blue. Huh. But, you know, you look everywhere else, you've got maybe 30 feet of blurry until it's, you know, nothing but solid fog. And I started, like, really questioning it when it was about 3 in the afternoon and this fog is still there. It's hot outside, but the fog is still there.
Yeah, the whole trip, and we had Mike. Mike was with us. He was down from Canada, Canuck, and a couple other people with us. And it was, and my wife was with us. And it was just a weird night. It was so weird because we stopped in Gulf Breeze, Florida, and we were walking on the beach, And we'll just say we were all goofing off. That's what we say. We won't say what we were actually doing, because it ain't legal in all the states. But anyway, the girls were walking up front, and the guys were walking in the back, and there was fog in between, so you couldn't see them. You could hear them. I mean, they couldn't have been 10, 15 feet ahead of us. But there was like baby-sized feet print that just started appearing in the sand in front of us. And at first I just thought somebody had walked there earlier, but then I realized the girls were walking in front of us, so they would have been messing up the print. And then sometimes you wouldn't see them, and then all of a sudden you'd see them again, like something was making them, like something was walking in front of us that we couldn't see. But since you could see the footsteps, it couldn't have been more than 3 or 4 feet in front of us. That was just another weird thing. Didn't see anything.
If you didn't know what time it was, too, you wouldn't have been able to tell what time it was. Because, I mean, it was just like an entirely artificial environment that we were in. It was like the fog itself was, like, slightly luminous. So you could see the sand and stuff in front of you. And you could look up, and you could see that the sky was blue through the little gap in the fog. But it's like if you looked out in front of you into the sides in all directions, it's like you couldn't even tell if it was really day or night or not. I mean, it just, as that fog sort of blended out into obscurity, I mean, it was like, I mean, the lighting was all wrong, the way it felt was all wrong, just everything about the damn situation was wrong. And I would have wondered about it if, you know, wondered if my senses were even working correctly if I didn't have like almost half a dozen other people with me.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, it was surreal, and we went to actually to convince two people or something, and it was the whole damn thing was surreal. I mean, I would have thought it was a cover memory or maybe one of them hologram generated things on one of the board of ships, but we covered a lot of territory. We were in top 10, I don't know, 5 cities. We were in Biloxi, we were in Gulfport, we were in Pensacola, we were in Perdido Key, we were in Destin, Florida, we were in Fort Walton Beach, we were in Panama City. That's why the trip took 15 hours. Panama City, from where I live right now, if you drive straight to it, 6 hours away, 5.5. But we were stopping and going and looking, and the place was, it was just a crazy night. Every place,
you know, what
we stopped,
was strange. What was strange is it seems like when the strangeness quotient like got turned up and ratcheted up, it's like, where in the hell was everybody else? It was just our little group. I mean, at the time of the year that we were there, and basically where we were, I mean, you know, this is like the golden Gulf Coast of America. I mean, this is one of our national treasures. Everybody goes there, even on weekdays, just whenever they can. I mean, there's always, you know, at least some moderate tourist activity. When it got really strange, nobody. It was just, like, straight up us.
Yeah, there's nobody around. It was crazy. We've got pictures where we're driving, like, through Destin, and you can see the lights. We're just taking pictures. There ain't nobody on the highway but us. The damn thing was surreal. And you know what's funny about this? This was...
Yeah, you know, and just 2 minutes ago when we were on the interstate, I mean, it was, like, you know, pretty heavy traffic. I mean, it was almost congested.
It was definitely a crazy.
Then all of a sudden we're the only people on the entire damn Gulf Coast.
And you know what's scary about all this is I do a lot of regressions over the last 10 years, and this is actually a longer back than that. But nobody who was on this trip has actually been regressed. It was never even brought up in a conversation to do it. Every now and then I'll see something like that happen, like an event that happens like that, and for some reason, it just never gets challenged. It's not the only event that's ever happened in my life, or probably Jason's or anybody else's who really does this a lot, where you don't challenge an event when you know for sure something happened. Canuck and I did a little mini session because of something we weren't sure if we saw or not. There was, and I don't know how to explain this, but we were sitting in a gazebo on near Eglin Air Force Base on the beach where Lynn and I had a crazy experience a decade before. And we're sitting there, and we're all talking, and Canuck said something about, what's that, what's that? And I didn't know what the hell he was talking about. And I looked, and he said, no, you don't see that coming down the pole. So I thought it was going to be like a spider or one of them, you know, hermit crabs or something. But for some reason, I remember seeing a gray going down the pole head first towards the ground, and then turning his body around, standing up, on the sidewalk, walking through the gazebo, out down the sidewalk, and then a light appeared to Sandy and just disappeared to walk into it. Problem with this is I don't know if it's real or not, and not everybody who was there saw it. So, but for some reason, it was never challenged, which is just weird. Even now, while I'm talking to y'all, I have no desire to be regressed for this. None. And I know damn sure something went on. So is it something bad went on and I just don't want to remember? Or I just don't want to remember? Something has got it locked because I don't remember. I just, in that event, and Mike and I talked about it many times, and Kay, and it was, again, the whole night was surreal.
Wow.
It was like somebody had me hooked up to an IV of maybe Demerol and Percocet or something.
Yeah, Joe, but here's a weird one, and this is something that, I mean, none of us had ever really considered before until this point, but, you know, when we were staying at that funky little hotel on the beach, it's like, why did they want tea separated from the rest of us like
they
did? I
know, that was crazy. And that, Jason, by the way, this is another account, this is another time. We went down, where were we, Blunt Island, Jacksonville, what's the oldest city in the United States?
St. Petersburg. Petersburg. We just did it. We just did like another one of those little Gulf Coast rides. Oh, we even crossed over and saw the Atlantic on that one.
Yeah, and Jason got a great picture there. It's actually on the iCar site. It's still on Coast to Coast site. But before we get into the picture, we drove down there and we were driving in when they first came out, one of those what the hell they call them? It was a hybrid car. And
Prius. It was a second gen Prius.
So we drove it down there. It was about 10-hour drive. Christina, my stepdaughter, got sick. And she works for iCar, and we were down there. And for some reason or another, we left her at the hotel. And even sick, she'd always want to be going with us because, she don't like missing out on anything. And that was a whole nother just surreal trip. We found ourselves in places and weird places and some road, and then we were driving down through Blunt Island, it's called, and there's they're either building or retiring parts of Agus Cruises there. And then right next to it, which, by the way, it's a big big Navy facility, right next to it was a big national park. Right down the road from it was a power plant, which I'm not sure if it was nuclear or not. I don't think it was, since it was regular. And we're driving along. We'd been exploring all up in these places, looking for signs, anything. And Jason took a picture, one picture, of a power plant, which none of us saw anything. So what was it, like the next day, I think it's the day after, he calls me up. He says, I'm going to send you this picture. And when you see it, you look at the power plant and you see the two smokestacks coming up. And you see what looks to be a trickle of smoke coming out the smokestack. It makes a swirl. It's like a little whirlpool of smoke, like there's something there. Well, that was badass. Everybody who's seen it was like, wow. And then Jason blew it up.
Yeah, it was like this little pattern. It looked like a sand dollar in the sky.
Yeah, you could see there was a swirl in the smoke. Well, that was cool. We were all like, and then the next couple of days went by, and one of the regulars from the chat room said, Joe,
and we were just dicking around, too. I had a relatively new camera, and we were just driving down the road, and I was hanging out the window just snapping off a bunch of pictures of stuff.
Yeah, so he got a picture of what appears to be a portal. And I forgot who it was. It was a couple of days later. We were all in the chat room talking. We were talking about the picture. And we noticed next to one of the stacks, there's an effing UFO flying past the stack, headed for the center of the damn circle. And look, none of us physically seen this. The camera caught it. The camera's eye was much faster than ours.
Right.
And it caught it. But we didn't see it. Until we see the picture. It's a damn good picture. It's still, you got to go to the iCar site. It's listed in one of the photo sets. I think there's 10 sets of photos there, plus the UFO pics. But it's in the beginning group, and it's a damn good picture. You should take a look at it.
Yeah, I'd like to take a look at that.
If not, you can find it on Coast to Coast. I think it was on my very first appearance on Coast. They featured the picture. It would be Joe Montaldo talking about ufology. I think that was the very first show I ever did with him. So, and which... Okay. Yeah, she can. Sorry, that's my son asking me if he can get a pizza. In the middle of the radio show.
He wants his own circular object.
Yeah, he just broke right now. He's paying our bills, so he's begging Dan for some food. And he made good good money, man. But anyway, enough of that.
Well, anyway, you know, one of the damnedest things about all these little, like, Gulf Coast excursions that we made, and, you know, I've done them on my own with my friends here in Texas, too, you know, just hitting up some back roads, basically getting lost in the woods, is that, I don't know, of all, like, the really strange events, I mean, there's nothing that's just, like, solid concrete. I mean, at no point did we, like, did, like, a gray ever show up and shake my hand or anything like that, you know?
So,
it's almost like that's some kind of a strange damn tease on its own.
Yeah.
It's well, all of that, you know, you and a lot of times you get this, you'll be sitting down watching TV or talking on the phone or chatting on the internet, and all of a sudden you're like, you know what, I gotta go, and I'm going, and you get in your damn car, and even though you don't have a destination, you really do. You're going somewhere. You know, in the old days, I don't see as many of these anymore as I used to, but in, for about the first 10 years, or maybe 12 years, maybe 15 when I was in ufology, I used to get a lot of people down here that would write to me and say, you know, Joe, I woke up and I had sand in my car. Or I had, you know, my trip meter, I had 300 miles in my car, 400 miles on my car. These some bitches were getting up in the middle of the night or in the middle of the day and just getting in their car and driving to wherever. And then driving back and having no recall of it whatsoever. Now, I regressed a few of them. And they were actually going to destinations, most of them in Florida, by the way, near Eglin Air Force Base. So it's like they were being called and summoned and taken and probed and whatever, and then sent back with no memory whatsoever. And something else we found out about Navarre Beach. Over the years, we've done a lot of investigation work down there. And over the years, one of the things we discovered is this: there's a lot of people who go there to get abducted. They, like, come spend a week's vacation and just have nothing to show for it. They haven't really spent any money. They don't have any damn pictures. They'll tuck in with the hotels. You know, they were seen coming in, seen checking out, but no, not in between. There's a lot of
that. You know, and a lot of these people want to wonder what, like, what's going on, and then, you know, they find proof that it happened. Like, they'll have a credit card receipt that, you know, has, you know, X number of gallons of gas, a Milky Way, and a Mountain Dew, like they always get when they go on a road trip. So it's not just sleepwalking. I mean, these people were, like, actually able to
functionally
drive to wherever they were, get in, talk to a little clerk running a cash register, buy a soft drink and a candy bar, get back in their car and drive off.
Yeah, there's no doubt that they're completely cognitive when it's going on. It's just, it doesn't, it's, the memory's just kaput. They're just wiping the memory out so nobody, you know, remembers what they've done, but you know, that's another scary thing, that you could be laying in bed and then get your ass up, get dressed, take off, go off for hours on end, and then come back and you don't remember anything. That's some shit.
Yeah.
And you'd think that somebody in a fugue state, to them the experience would be like, well, I don't know what happened, but I woke up in the drunk tank four counties over, and that's not what's happening here.
Yeah. You know, how many of you guys remember how the movie Close Encounters was, that everybody was drawn to go toward Devil's Tower. No matter how they got there, they all had some images that they try to do artwork of the mountain and so forth in whatever way, and then they all wanted to go there, and of course the military are all over the place there, but still they were still driving to get there to, you know, and so it's like this calling. They don't know why they're going there, but they're just going there. They don't know what to expect. It's just like, you know, something is calling them to go to that particular spot. So that's what this thing reminds me of, what you guys are talking about. You know, people just find themselves just going for a drive, just drive for whatever reason, you know.
Well, that proves, too, that Spielberg or somebody else involved in the film, probably Spielberg himself, like, obviously did his homework, because in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, there were a lot of, you know, the standard elements that are happening today in the modern ufology scene. But if you take a look at way back then, I mean, Spielberg didn't just, like, you know, have a casual interest in it. I mean, it wasn't like today that you can get on the internet and read, you know, two dozen different abduction scenarios and basically have an entire history of, you know, modern ufology, you know, in the course of a couple of hours. Back when this was done, Spielberg actually had to, like, do his homework. He's probably invested a lot of time actually visiting or talking to, you know, some of the early experts in the field back in the day, and that's a point that, well, a lot of people take for granted nowadays.
Yeah. For the type of reason why they even had Hynek on board, you know, on the movie set itself. So you're right. He has done his homework, and who's to say that he's had an experience himself? And so it's just a lot. It just opens up a whole different thing, especially when it comes out to the type of aliens they were. You know, you got, you know, the aliens with the big head and so forth, and you start hearing more reports of that type. You know, just all of a sudden everybody's seeing these type of grays. So it's just kind of like an eye-opener for that period, because, you know, what, before that people were thinking about it. When they do talk about aliens, you know, that, you know, something that you would see in a B-movie kind of thing. But now this whole shift has been moving right along. Now we're seeing more grays. Now we got the reptilians as well, and as well as the other races too.
Well, you know, what you really do, as far as what I've been doing for the last 30 years or so, is you can go back 6,000 years. You'll find the reptilians all over the place, and you'll find the human-type aliens all over the place. You'll find them all in all kinds of societies, all the way up until fairly modern times. But you don't really see the grays until right around the time of Christ, right before, depending on who you want to believe, right before, right after. The first things I've ever seen, as far as the Egyptian stuff goes, showed up about 23 to 2600 years ago. So it was right around, maybe right before, right after, but it was real close. Let's see, time of Christ was, what, 2,000 years ago, so it was probably a little before. But that's when they seemed to pop up on the scene. But then when we throw the blood type stuff in there, that really kind of flings stuff around now. And now that I Ancient Aliens gig, a lot more people have actually got involved with it. And, you know, we had the original doctor that the material we got, and then all the study we did. But then since then, there's been two more that have actually looked into the data. And since Ancient Aliens, there's been two more that's looked into the data.
This is just a little sidetrack, but here's something that kind of pisses me off about the field of ufology as a whole, is that, man, recently, like over the past few months, since the whole blood type thing kind of has been out there for a while, but it kind of went a little bit bigger when Ancient Aliens got it, is I've seen a few people acting like it's their ideas.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
Well, George Norrie told somebody about 2 years ago, a friend of mine called me who was listening to Coast to Coast, and said, Joe, some guy was on there taking credit for, this happened twice. We'll do it both times. First off, the first one he called me was, actually a girl called me and told me that someone was taking credit for my Betty and Barney Hill theses. Or I should say rewrite. And George Norrie corrected me and said, oh, no, I know who that came from. Joe Lentallo introduced it. And I did. I introduced it on Coast to Coast. So there was no doubt about it. Well, it was about 2 years ago. I was actually on a ride. I was with my wife out, and I got a phone call. And it was 1:30 in the morning, I guess that's why I answered it. And it's a friend of mine. He said, Joe, I'm listening to the Coast. And George Norrie just tore some guy's ass up for taking credit for the blood type study. I was like, you got to be kidding me. And, you know, I get a lot of credit for it, but I'm not the only one that was involved with this. There were a lot of other directors at ICAR, some of them retired now, some of them still working, but that had a hand in this. A lot of the data and a lot of the applications and a lot of the gray study, the human study, and the reptilian study, which are still present on the site and have been there for 10 years, or thanks to November Hansen. She's the one that set all that stuff up. A lot of the early stuff we did on UFOs was thanks to DeAndrew. Jason's had a hand in it. A few of the other directors have had a hand in it. So, yes, I get the credit for it because I'm the director, but it was too much for any one of us to really deal with. And frankly, if when you take something over completely, then it just becomes your own personal opinion. You have to have other people in it to be seeing, just to make sure that the data itself is at least reasonably clean or clear. But one thing about the blood type study is you can go to the website yourself. There have been 37,000 people take the one on the site. And you can go check this for yourselves. We keep the polls and the whatchamacallits locked. So you can only vote once, and that's it. You can't vote again. It catches you by your IP address, so you ain't voting twice. So I tell people all the time, you don't believe me, go check it. It's locked. It stays locked. I've had several people over the years go, oh, it is. And I say, you're damn right it is. And on top of that, we've got all the ones. And this was something nice. I don't know if Jason knew about this or not, but, you know, I'm always talking about 40,000, 50,000 people who have reported. I made the database available to Ancient Aliens. First time I've ever done that in the entire time I have been a director for ICAR. Because I wanted them to understand what we were talking about and what the actual range of what we were talking about was.
Well, Joe, you're doing it wrong, man. Haven't you seen? You should have taken MUFON's clue and like sold it to Bigelow for some damn money.
Well, I mean, they can't use it for anything other than like if I'm on Ancient Aliens or if they invite somebody else on that works for the organization, they can use the data. But I wanted them because I didn't know if I was going to talk about it or not on the air. But if I was going to boast about it on the air, I wanted them to be able to back it up. I didn't want to have to hear, oh, well, how do you know if I know? No, they know because I showed them. That's why they know. I brought my laptops with me and two.
No, man, I'm still like, I'm all mad at you. You should have sold it to Bigelow, man. You could have traded it for like one of them space tins or something like that.
If you're listening, dude, we've got some files that I guarantee you'd be interested in. Here's one for you right here. Just to help y'all understand how crazy this gets. About 25 years ago, and I got the journal, and you can look, and you can even have the ink test if you want to. I made a picture of a little box with these little beams bouncing back and forth that opened that created this drive system. Now, I'm not the only one who did this, by the way. There were quite a few contactees at the time that had sent me similar drawings. It is almost identical to the EM drive we're talking about today. Almost identical. And there's probably, I got about 50, 55 of these drawings. I did mine, and I never really thought about it, and I talked about it on the air on one of the shows, I think it was on Wake Up USA, and people started emailing me, and the show's still available, so from time to time I get an email of it. It looks like the EM drive, so it was almost like they were being told, or maybe they were being shown, not so much the future, but maybe how to do this, and then someone along the line, because you know what? No one knows how the EM drive works. They know it works now, they actually know it works now, but no one knows how it works. I don't understand that, Jason. How does NASA not know how it works?
Yeah, I mean, that's cool and everything, and, I mean, I think it's interesting, and it might actually lead to something. Look at it right now, I mean, what's it producing? I mean, like, barely registerable, like, micrograms of thrust?
Yeah, NASA said, let me retract that. European Space Agency actually said, if it can develop correctly in a decade, you might be able to get speeds that up that could get you to Mars in 25 to 30 days. That's hauling ass, don't get me wrong. And that's enough to move you around in the solar system, which is kind of nice, but it's still not near the kind of speeds we need to really even explore our own solar system. Jupiter is 2 light years out, so it's a four-year round trip if you can get to light speed, which, by the way, I got to say this while I'm thinking about it, there is new hope for light speed. Cosmological researchers came out and said the original bang had to be moving much
faster. Wait, Joe, you're saying Jupiter is light years out. No, dude, Jupiter is like light minutes out.
No, I meant it's 2 years away from us. It takes light 2 years to get there from here.
It doesn't take light 2 years to get there from here. I mean, if you were throwing a ballistic long shot at it and slingshot it, you might be able to get to Jupiter in 2 years, but you wouldn't be able to stop.
Well, not us. I don't know how we'd get there. I don't know how we. It's going to take us some time to get anywhere. I mean, come on, we're talking about anywhere from a month to a year to get to damn Mars, which is practically around the corner in the solar system. And we don't even know how we're going to navigate the asteroid belt yet. Shit, we got all kinds of things we got to work out. For a big spacecraft, for a small one, not so much, but for a big one, yeah. And then you can't even build it on Earth. If you're going to build something big enough to take a crew to Mars or out into the outer solar system, won't have to be fairly big.
You could build it on. You could build it at Earth. I mean, you could piece it together like the ISS.
Yeah, in space. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You put it together. You build parts of it here. But why even bother? Why not just put a base on the moon and build it there? A lot of the stuff we need is already there. So why not just build it there? It'd be much easier to construct.
One good reason not to build it on the moon is depending on which wacky conspiracy theory you believe. Either Hitler has a base there or the bad aliens have a base there, so the moon's just off limits, man.
Man, look, the moon is back on limits. And then, you know, we've talked about this.
Why do you think we never went back?
You know, yeah, I know. And what happened? You know, China and India and Russia said they were all going. All of a sudden, they're not going to the moon. They're going to Mars. Screw the moon. I'm like, really? From what I understand, the moon is rich in helium-3, but yet we're not even interested in going. I mean, they basically say the whole entire surface is covered in this shit, and we're not even interested in going. I'm like, what? Oh, by the way, the UN and the United States have finalized you can mine in space now. And asteroids. It is actually legal now. Before it wasn't legal, it's actually legal now. They made a big hubbub about it the other day when they signed all the paperwork. So, hey, look, you got the money, get out there. But, I mean, I hear helium-3 is a shit, but we're not really willing to go to... I mean, come on, the moon is... It's at the new speeds, we got a day away, 2 days away. Hell, a week if we want to putt. And we're still not going. And we easily got craft and get there. But I don't get that. I don't understand that. If you could help make this planet self-sufficient, why wouldn't you do it?
I know, and it's not like it's that hard to get to the moon either. I mean, we did it a long time ago.
That's what I'm saying. We got way
or not, depending on who you believe.
Well, we know that. We know now, thanks to China. China released those survey pictures of the different landing spots, and you can still see the Richard McCall on the ground. Two of them, you can see the rover. All of them, all but one of them, you can still see the flag. But what's odd is three of the ones are seen, or four of the ones are seen, you can still see, you know, the lander part on the ground. Two of them, you couldn't see the lander, which was kind of weird. You could see the flag. One of them, you could see the flag and the rover, but you didn't see the lander. The lander was gone. That was just kind of weird. Maybe it was blurred. Maybe it was obstructed. I mean, I really don't know. But China did make them public, and I think India said they were releasing some, too. So there's no real argument about did we go to the moon anymore. Yes, we went to the moon.
Well, some people will believe anything.
Why we went to the moon is still anybody's best guess. But, yeah, we went. Is the hollow moon theory true? Hell, if I know. It might be. We're going to send Renee to find out, by the way. We're going to stop to his ass and send him up there.
Hey, Rocket, we got better...
I'm gonna hook you to a drone and get the remote control of Christina.
Oh, great. You want her to steer the thing? Oh, man, I'm in trouble.
You want to be in space? How much shit can you run into?
It's Christina, remember?
Oh, that's true, honey. I'm thinking about that. She might bump one of them satellites out of space. What about, Jason, what's the name of that satellite everybody keeps talking about that's supposed to be up there for thousands of years?
The Black Knight satellite.
Now, what is this? Is there any truth to this? I mean, I've heard all kind of stories about this. I've never really done any research into it. That's why I'm asking.
Look, man. I mean, first off, pictures of it haven't been out forever. I mean, they've basically been out since, the earliest ones they can find of it. And I might be, even a little too early about this came from, the space shuttle era. But, I mean, it's just, it's this thing, this little black, weird-shaped thing that, you really don't have any contrast to determine, what size it even is. I mean, is it something huge and far away, or is it something tiny and up close? Well, it's pretty much been definitively debunked, and I know I'm going to get a lot of flack about this shit, because there are people that just need to believe. But sometimes you have to take Occam's razor and use the damn thing. It is a useful tool. Yes, logic and the simplest, most common, best explanations sometimes are the truth, but it's basically a piece of thermal blanket, a chunk of space junk, and if you research it, you can even figure out, they'll tell you which particular craft it was supposed to come off of, but it's basically a piece of thermal blanket that has had a couple of pictures snapped of it that everybody is making a huge big deal out of. I mean, come on, if this thing was the size and some type of mega structure that everybody thinks is out there, I mean, you'd be able to see the damn thing from Earth, but I mean, it's just a tiny piece of basically insulation that got knocked off of something.
I was wondering, because, I've heard all kinds of stories, and I've seen this, and I've seen that.
It's usually the same photos, too,
It is usually the same photos, and I'm come on, people. And then, I don't want to hate on people's stories or whatever, because everybody's got the right to believe. But, people, when you believe all the time without getting any facts, it just doesn't work. One of the things...
You know,
Speaking of that, hang on, I got a point to make here. Is that's one of the things that I've noticed is like the misinformation and disinformation that, I mean, in the UFO and paranormal community, I mean, we've seen that crap. And, you know, like the fake news sites, we've had that for years and years. You know, just blatant clickbait, dumb stuff that you give the people what they want to hear and what they want to believe in. They're going to start sharing it. You're going to get hundreds of thousands of clicks, and you're going to make a small amount of money off of it. You know, they figured out how to milk that. We've seen that in the paranormal for years, but it's now that same clickbait, you know, tell them what they want to hear mentality, it went mainstream with this election. Now everybody's making a big idea out of fake news and everything, but this is one of the things that I noticed. The most loudmouth, venomous, vehement Trump supporters are also those same idiots who believe everything. The people that are out there copying and pasting those official, undeniable proof that Michelle Obama was born a manling from, like, World
oh,
News
God.
Daily or something like that. You know, we've seen that same shit forever in the paranormal community. All the fake
yeah.
videos, all the BS everywhere. It finally went mainstream, and this is one of the things I've noticed. The loudmouth, dumbest Trump supporters that posted the most BS links like that, they're also posting the chemtrail links. They're also posting the moon landing as a hoax links. You know, they're posting that David Icke shit that they've got proof that the entire royal family is reptilian, you know,
that's
like they're about to rip their masks off. I mean, these idiots became mainstream thanks to this election cycle, and an inordinate amount of them supported Donald Trump. They think he's going to save us from the NWO. Him and Putin are both going to take their shirts off and start, like, throwing reptilians on pikes out front of the White House and the Kremlin. That's what these idiots believe. He's going to stop the chemtrails, everything. And it's like, oh, come on, man. And now you people are voting.
I know, they voted in big numbers this time, but I was stunned by this election. It was great, though. You ought to listen to the show we did, the panel show we did for the 4 hours. It was a great show. You could tell by listening to all six of us, we were all stunned. We were all like, what the? What? What? The aliens
invaded
for sure. Now, we knew it was some kind of alien conspiracy because, I've seen crazy
stuff. Oh, for real, man. I was chatting with a couple of Canadians and a couple of Britons that I know while it was going on. They were watching it, too. And none of us could, like, really believe it. I mean, I was the first one to accept it. And I was like, oh, my God, she screwed up so bad that he might win.
It was freaky. It really was. And then I still remember somebody wrote to me during that particular show. Somebody writes to me and said, he's really a reptilian, isn't he, Joe? You can tell me the truth. He's a reptilian. I know you're the reptilian expert, and he's a reptilian. And I was like, really? And this is a very liberal friend of mine. I'm not going to mention his name. No, man,
the nut job community thinks he's not a reptilian, dude. He's like the last chance we have to, like, overthrow our reptilian NWO overlords. They think he's going to do it, man.
Them reptilians are going to give Trump some gold press Latin, and that's going to be the end of that.
He's
going to be like, cool, man, do whatever you want. You need a duck, hold on, I'll round him up for your ass. You want that Christina George woman? Give me a few minutes. I can send a plane out to Cali.
Oh, wow. Eric, I was just waiting for the comments inside the chat room.
No one is safe or sacred around his place. Who is this? Jehovah, what are you doing? Are you just ranting and raving in the chat room just to be ranting and raving? Is that what you're doing?
That's what he's doing.
We're talking to some people in the chat room.
We got Jehovah inside the chat room. You know, oh Lord.
Jehovah, you know the rule, only people who have no sin can speak about sin, and obviously you're sinning in the room, so shut up.
Yeah, but didn't you learn anything from Indiana Jones? If he doesn't spell it with an I, it's not
that's
him.
That's right, you see.
Right.
Busted, homie.
Busted, yeah, Jason busted.
From her.
And he can't even spell, you know, he has two H's at the end of his name on this one down here, so you can't even spell your own name. Jesus. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm not living forever, man. I'm planning on, you know, having the aliens give me some of them life probes and stuff. take me out to one of them big, beautiful blue planets. Well, I can't say that part.
Yeah, welcome to the United Pub. Welcome to UPRN, where we will diss on you hard for just showing up in our town.
We will, too, but we don't play around here. We have a lot of fun. And, oh, speaking of that, Canadian friends, we have Dave Scott now. He hosts Spaced Out Radio.
Yeah.
I really like your show. They host our late night now, 11 to 2 a.m. Y'all can catch them Monday through Sunday. On the weekends, it's James Tyson, I believe, and I forgot the lady's name. She does Cosmic Passport before Spaced Out Radio, but I'll get her name for you. But they're doing a great job on the network. They're doing good on the archives. Shows are a lot of fun, and they cover a lot of topics, so be sure to check them out. And you can thank Christina George. They're courtesy of her. I was talking with him on her show one night while we were at break, and he's now on the network with us. He's a syndicated show, but he does a great job, and you can find him. He will be here at 11 o'clock. We will be live. His shows are live, and he does come to the chat room if you want to come and harass him in the chat room. He's in, actually, I think, 4 or 5 chat rooms when he's chatting, so be sure to come out and check him out and give him hell. That's what he's here for, guys and girls. They don't take calls, so you're going to have to chat them. You have to come into one of the chat rooms. It don't have to be this one. It can be anyone you want. But you have to, if you want to talk to him, you have to chat him. He don't take calls. So be sure to harass the guy. He likes to be harassed. He's like the rest of the hosts of this network. He likes to.
Oh, yeah. We harass each other. What are you talking about?
Dude, we're evil like that, man. I tell people all the time when people ask me to come on a network, because right now we're full plus, and we still have 3 new shows coming up. We're already full. And I tell people all the time, you need to know if you're going to come on this network, you got to have thick skin because you will get picked on. At one of the, you know, we do the quarterly meetings we do now, you will get picked on, man. It's one of them things. If you can't handle it, don't even bother. And we swap hosts and crisscross hosts a lot on the network to help each other out, so you will get picked on. You definitely will. You better have thick skin. But we have a lot of good hosts these days. We got a really talented staff of shows. Monday through Saturday, we don't broadcast live on Sundays, but we have a really good lineup. We offer everything from politics to exoteric to getting probed by aliens and chasing your ghosty parents around your house. So check out them all. I would line them up, but it takes me 15 minutes to go through all the shows we have nowadays. So it's a great lineup, but be sure to check it out. And like I said, we have new people coming on. We got a new paranormal show coming on in a couple weeks. It's more, maybe more psychic medium than paranormal. We'll see. But anyway, that's
Lord.
That's not till after the Christmas holiday. And don't forget now, because you know on Fridays we broadcast from 5 p.m. to 4 a.m. now live. So be sure to check out all the shows on Friday. There's a buttload of them, and there are a lot of good shows there. And then remember, after Quantum Leap, Scott takes over with Spaced Out Radio, but following them is Terminus, which is that dark ambient music that Elaine Pastaneo puts together.
Ooh.
So yeah, be sure to check all.
And
that.
And just as long as you don't start like turning it over to all like those new agers, and the network doesn't become like hippies with crystals and
things. I have recruited a couple of. I only got. There's only 2 new ages. I got 2 new ages. It's like,
and that's where it starts.
Now, listen, it's like the arc now. We got 2 new ages. We got 2 millennials. We got 2 X-Gens, 2 baby boomers, 2 Hispanics, 2 black. I'm telling you, 2 white. It's like the arc around here, man. It's crazy, but. My favorite boast about this network, regardless of anybody ever thinks about us or anything else, but my favorite boast is we do not stifle your politics here. You can be a liberal, you can be a conservative, you can be a middleist, you can be an independent, you can be Green Party, you can be Jill Stein herself. We allow you to speak your opinion on your show. It is yours. And if y'all don't believe me, a good, close, dear friend of mine, Jeffrey Pritchett, who hosts Church of Mavis, and Chip Pleasure, who does Mind Cemetery, or you can't find anybody more liberal than him, and they're allowed to rant and rave all they want on a network. In the same breath, Aline and Bernadine are both very conservative, and they're allowed to speak. And then all the rest of us are somewhere.
And then you got wild cards like me, who will just hook into the show at random and not even tell you. And who knows? I might just pick a side and argue it to the death.
That's right.
At random.
Dave and I have argued about stuff that we agreed on the air before. It's just hilarious. Somebody, we were doing a show one night, and we were doing Devil's Advocate kind of stuff, and one of the caller calls and said, "I've heard y'all both speak. Y'all agree on this." It was true. that's not what we were doing. And we were laughing our asses off, too. It was just funny as hell. But it's part of it. I mean, and like I said, I enjoy doing it because I have a lot of fun, a lot of good hosts on the network, a lot of good people still working with iCar. Thanks to damn Ancient Aliens, the amount of members we've got have probably quadrupled, the amount of people went direct. I just don't have the time. I've been harassing Jason's friend, Joe. I get him to help me every once in a while. Poor bastard. I'll just, hey, Joe, call this person. Wait, just contact you. I ain't got the time. Jason, can you call it, Joe? Can you call us? He's like, man, what are you doing to me, Joe? What's up, man? What are you doing to me? And he also works on one of the abduction databases for me. I think it's the abduction at AT&T.net, which we get a lot of mail in as well. But the Ancient Alien people were great. To whoever just asked me that question, who was that? Stephanie. They were great. They were nice people. It was like a whirlwind. It was fly in, have lunch, watch the crazy pilots. I tell y'all one thing I learned. You ever want to see the pulse of our government and work? You want to see them wheeling and dealing with the bigs? Go stay at the Mandarin Hotel in D.C. I'm having lunch, right? I seen at least 15 politicians that I recognize, 3 or 4 really big names. I seen at least 2 CEOs that I recognize, and they all just having lunch, chit-chatting, having, you know, all of them sitting there having their big filet mignons and stuff, chit-chatting about God knows what. Right there in the open for everybody in the world. See, if you had one of them, it listened to devices, you could have probably heard what they were saying. It just cracked me up. And then after that, I went up and checked into the room. They gave me a great suite, by the way. Damn bathroom was bigger than the suite was. I mean, the thing was huge. You could put a family in it. But
yeah, everybody else there was probably a shady lobbyist.
They might have been. And but right out of my window, I could see Obama's window from my window. They sent me in a great suite. Top of the Mandarin Hotel in the corner suite. It was great. But the thing of it is, like I said, it was a whirlwind. I rode, ate, went up, did the interview, took a shower, went to bed, got up, got on a plane, and left. I mean, it was just like that. Just, and it was over. And then I had to wait 6 months before it came on. Like, I had actually got to the point where I'm like, well, F these people. I guess they just changed their mind or something. And I forgot who was writing to me. They said, Joe, no, you know, that's how long it takes. I said, man, come on, 6 months. And finally, it was episode 14, second to last episode, called The Return. And I got to give them credit. They did a good job with it, and they stuck me between 2 really good ufologists. So I was happy with it. We've got a lot of good press out of it. I'm supposed to be doing codes, but I keep forgetting to go set up a date.
Hey, Joe, what I figured they was going to do is I figured they were going to, like, you know, edit out everything else but take the craziest thing you could say and then, like, have you and David Wilcock back-to-back talking about it, like,
No, she, when the girl who was in charge, she really wanted a lot of information. This is what kills me, okay? Y'all seen, what, 5 minutes, 6 minutes? We'll expand it and blow it up, say 8 minutes. I don't think it was that long, then. For 4.5 hours of filming and interviews. Four and a half hours.
That's the way it is when you're doing shows like that.
So I noticed.
I used to work for, you know, a television station here in California, and, you know, you'd be surprised. They videotape hours and hours of video into only to fit it into within a 5-minute segment. Yeah.
Yeah, and then they'll use that segment for, like, seasons and seasons.
Well, they asked me, or they told
yeah.
me, or they asked me, however you want to look at it, because I signed a contract with them. But,
I mean, Phil Coppins has been dead for a while, but, I mean, they're still coming up with stuff from him.
Well, yeah, because they take so much. And she told me that they were going to be using some other stuff, because we talked about a lot of things. The only thing they didn't like, and I'll be honest about this, there was the Russian abductee guy, you know, the mayor, whatever he is, and one other, the one in California with all the guns who was saying he was an alien hybrid, and the other guy said he was being abducted. Both of them were lying, and I could tell they were lying. It wasn't even hard for me to figure out. I've been doing this a long time. They did not like that I called these 2 guys liars. I'm surprised it didn't cost me an interview, because you could tell everybody, they've been playing this up. And I said, I'm sorry, sweetie, I can't agree with him. And then she said, well, let's talk about David Jacobs. I was like, oh. I'm like, look, I said, I would rather not. I said, look, he's a decent abduction researcher. I said, but he's a single researcher. We're an organization that's different. And I said, you got some shady stuff that we've heard about over the years. And I said, I don't personally know that. I said, so I don't want to confront him about it because he does his thing, we do our thing. I said, somehow.
Look, I'll put it this way about David Jacobs, all right? And this is where the buck stops with me, is in the course of, like, more than a decade of doing this, I've talked to hundreds of, you know, different experiencers of every type, you know, from people that have just seen UFOs to people that have memories of being on the ship, you know, actual contact with aliens. And here's my thing about how all of his abduction cases are. And the only place where I have heard stories precisely like Jacob's are by the people that he has hypnotically regressed. I mean, that's the only place stories like his come from. Nobody else has anything with that much, you know, depth and minutiae and, you know, the same general themes as him. His cases are completely and totally unique, so in the body of, like, you know, the greater field of evidence, I have no choice but to just more or less ignore them.
They, it's hard. I mean, it's and somebody asked me, I don't know why you do this, and I had posted, Joe might have took it down, but I had posted.
You know, and especially with the whole Emma Woods type thing, where he's, like, creating layers and layers of his own almost delusion and integrating it into his script with aliens. I mean, I just have to, like, his handful of results just simply, they're erroneous data, and I must throw them out.
You know, I see that a lot, you know, when you see these researchers, you know, they go to a lot of these conferences and they're speaking, and I see them throughout the years, and it's pretty much almost the same thing, but there's always more added toward the so-called experience that they supposedly had, of, you know, what the encounter with aliens. And then next you know it, now they have a child. They have some kind of affair with it. They have this great love for the alien, this particular alien that keeps visiting. And all of a sudden, the stories get even bigger and bigger. And it's like, how do you go from this encounter that you've been speaking about, you know, originally, then you're talking about more built up on that particular experience, that there's more that happened than you know, that you told us before. So it seemed like one story just became a bigger story.
Well, we're funny, man. We watch a lot of that stuff. You know, one of the very first reasons I think I ever got interested in David is, I think I'd only been doing it like 2 or 3 years of radio stuff. I was still doing Wake Up USA, and I got a lady contacted me about her abduction stuff. And I was talking to her on the phone like I do with a lot of people. And she's going on, and I said, well, have you talked to any researchers? And she had been hypnotized by David Jacobs. And I was like, wow. Mm-hmm. Well, over the 2 month period, I had like 5 of them call me from him, and they were telling me this, and I was like, well, finally, I wasn't doing hypnosis at the time. I think Linda actually did it, and it wasn't even Linda, it was one of Gregory Avery's people, actually his girlfriend, and she did it. That was before either one of us did hypnosis, that's how long ago this was. And what came out of her head was nothing that Jacobs had said. She told me the whole encounter she gave him, and, you know, we videotape and record everything, done it from day one. It's just how we do regressions. That way there's no question that what has. And now we even add the voice stress meter so you can only see your own stress levels when you're doing it. So when I heard this, I was like, what the? So I called one of the ladies back and we're talking. So some of the stuff this other woman told me, I started asking these ladies, do you remember anything like this? And a couple of days go by, 2 of them call me back, and I'm like, well, and it just wasn't. So I don't, by the way, I'm going to be upfront about this. I don't think he was doing this on purpose. I think this was lack of experience. Because of Jason and a few others in the organization, David, Dean, and a few others, we developed some really strict protocols on hypnosis from day one, because none of us are, I would say, great believers in it, but we do use it. I think what he was doing was he was leading them without really realizing, saying stuff like, well, it was that reptilian alien, right? Well, you can't tell that to somebody, especially if they're under hypnosis, you know, like level 4 or 5. They're really susceptible to that kind of shit. And so I think that's what was going on. Now, I could be wrong, and I'm sure he would disagree 100%. But from the 4 or 5 people I've talked to, it is, and by the way, I've talked to more than a dozen. Well, no, I'm sorry, about 8 of his contactees over the years. It might be a dozen. I'm not sure. I have to check. But it just doesn't add up with what he says about the reptilians. And I got to be honest with you. All the information we've collected from the reptilians, from the questionnaires, and from the abduction research, doesn't come nowhere near what he said. They don't seem to be near as aggressive as me. It's not that they can't be, by the way. They just don't seem to be that daily kind of aggression that he puts out. They seem to be more like, to be honest with you, they act more like us than any of the other aliens do. We act more like them might be a better way of saying it. But they definitely have emotions. They definitely believe in a hierarchy. They definitely believe in a religion. And they have no qualms smacking your ass around. But at the same aspect, they do consider us family in some weird sixth sense of the way. They're not like the Greys or the human aliens when it comes to us. So let's be honest about this. If the son of a bitches wanted us gone, they could have ate us off the planet 3,000 years
ago. You think?
But they wouldn't even have to use weapons. They could have just hunted us by hand 3,000 years ago or 6,000 years ago and killed us all. So, I mean, the point of it is, and I say this all the time, you always judge the aliens by the actions. Well, they haven't destroyed us, and they haven't enlightened us. So really, what the hell are they here for? So one of those two things should be the real answer to why they're here. They should be here to help and enlighten our species, or here to take the planet over and kill everybody. But neither one of them seem to be what's going on. So what is it? They're not here to enhance.
Well, you know, and that's the correct agnostic view to take of it. Because, if you take a look at, some of the other dogmas in ufology, or particularly, belief systems about aliens, I mean, there are people that, based on their own pre-existing dogmas and all the crap they believe in that they've been taught on their life, that aliens are either, A, they're the demons that are here to destroy us, or they're the benevolent angels, the Galactic Federation of Light, that's here to be our benevolent, helpful space brothers. They're either the devils or angels, one of the two. And, I mean, anybody that sees them that way, I think they are just so wrong from the start.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's the thing, too, because, I mean, we in the human race do that to each other, you know. About going through certain areas, certain countries that they act a certain way, or they, you know, you meet a race of people and you're unfamiliar with them, you know, you always hear stories, well, you know, they're really aggressive people, I would never go there kind of thing. You know, we get caught in this crazy loop because of what we're taught, what we're told, you know. So it's the same thing with the whole alien thing, you know. Are they good aliens or bad aliens? Well, they could be. I mean, you know,
I think they just like us in the fact
that exactly.
And the fact that they're not good or bad. They just whoever you happen to catch at the moment.
Well, take a look at what Stephen Hawking says about them. I mean, everybody makes a huge deal that Hawking's like, I hope we don't ever meet another technological society because, well, you know, Hawking's like, it would be a bad idea. He's like, we're better off just hidden, not being noticed in the little corners of nowhere. And what he's saying is he's not necessarily afraid of aliens because of what they may or not may be. He's afraid that they're going to be just like us. And he's got a good point. What's happened on Earth every time a technologically advanced civilization has come across an indigenous people? That indigenous way of life was destroyed, and chances are those indigenous people were rolled up into, at best, some type of serf class, you know, under the new technological overlords. I mean, what he's really saying is commentary about us. And he's got a good point. Based on how we are, why should we expect for them to be anything but like us?
Well, and see, that's not really a bad thing either. People always say, oh, it's bad. Well, no, because humans can be very compassionate, very loving, and very kind. We can also be very vicious and very vindictive. But if they're like us and they feel and they understand, then they may take pity on our asses from time to time. And again, they may not, but I mean, obviously they're not wiping us out, so that's at least a good start.
Well, there's proof that they haven't. Everybody keeps saying that, you know, one of the biggest points of evidence that aliens care about us is that back in the 70s, they flew over some nuclear missile silos and basically proved that they could turn them off, turn them on, render them completely and totally useless, that, you know, they're at any whim of theirs whatsoever. So they say that, well, aliens don't want us using nukes. They did that as proof to show that they care. Well, then why didn't they stop the Enola Gay? I mean, they couldn't do anything about one device in one B-29. Exactly, in Fukushima. I mean, why isn't some kind of mothership just hovering over that reactor and sucking those beaming those radioactive guts out into space or the core of the sun? They're not.
You know, we think about that.
They didn't stop the Holocaust. They didn't stop anything.
And that's the other thing, too, because we got to look at ourselves, too. You know, did we actually stop any of that stuff either as it was going on? Too, I mean, there's a lot of weird things that humans do that, you know, can leave a sane person go, you know, what the heck? You know, why are we doing this? You know, why are we causing so much trouble over here? You know, why are we doing stuff to pollute, you know, the planet? Why is this? Why that? You know, but it all in all, whether you're alien or not, we're all responsible for ourselves and to try to do things better. And you know, it's got to start with ourselves, you know, and if we're all trying to do, you know, the thing the right way to try to better this, you know, the planet and our way of living, then that's kind of the step in the right direction as a group. You know, it has to start somewhere. You know, aliens been doing it for eons. And, you know, you've got your a-holes up there, too, so...
Oh, yeah, you do. It's just like an awesome universe.
Yeah, yeah.
They got their good ones, they got their bad ones, they,
Yeah, yeah.
And Stephen Hawking is smart enough to realize that.
I know,
Yeah.
Well, at least he has that's a good sign. It means he hasn't gone total bazonkas on us, so... I was kind of wondering there a little bit. He was getting a little strange there for a while. Some of his theories coming out, even the community was like, what you talking about, Willis?
Yeah, but Stephen Hawking's got it bad now, and it's kind of like one of the saddest things in the world to see is, I mean, he's still got the most brilliant mind on the damn planet, probably. He's trapped in a shell, dude, and it's like he's basically lost everything. It's like he can only communicate, I mean, using, like, what he's got left. It's something like one or two words per minute. I mean, it's almost like he's a computer disconnected from the rest of the world by now. And that's a damn shame.
Yeah, and he's starting to fade away.
He could figure the grand unifying theory out, but die before he gets a chance to express it.
Right.
And it'd be hard, too. It's a shame because it's a shame they can't, like, hook a computer program to his head where he could just... kind of, you know, remember when they put that chip in that guy's head and recorded some of his memories? It's a shame they couldn't, like, chip his head and record everything that was in there and sift through it on a computer later on.
I'm to the point, like, hell, put his head in a jar, hook it up to the internet, and let him run the entire damn world.
He probably wouldn't mind. He's...
Because democracy seems to not be working so damn great.
Well, God, yeah, it's a little weird. Definitely gotten a little strange, I gotta say. I'm not sure what to think about some of this.
And since I got it back on the political tangent, where mainstream politics meets ufology. I'm sorry, but I got a diss on a bunch of people. All you people who thought that John Podesta was so cool and that he was somehow going to make Hillary disclose all of her information because Podesta's a UFO guy. Oh, he's so awesome. He's going to do everything. You know, Hillary's going to disclose it's going to happen. You guys said that about Obama. You guys said that about Bush. You guys said that about everybody else, and it's never, ever going to happen.
I've told y'all people 100 times, they don't tell Democrats about ETs.
And let me tell you the truth about John Podesta. He's not some hero out there fighting the good fight for disclosure and the truth. No, he is a lobbyist. He is the highest level political lobbyist and operative you could possibly have. He is the scum of the earth. His job is to take hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, from the rich powers that be that really run things in our company and funnel it to the politicians who will give these powers that be whatever the hell they want for this money. That is who John Podesta is. He is not a hero. He is trash. He is the lowest form of life on the planet. And if you really want to fix the United States political system, start executing lobbyists.
Yeah, that's a good way to start. Personally, I think, well, you hear Trump wants to ban lobbyists. I don't think he's going to ban them, but he was definitely going to get rid of a lot of their influence. He is anti-lobbyist. I got to give him credit for that. We'll see how it all works.
Yeah, good luck, dude. But even though he might be the president-elect, he can't fight the machine, you know?
Well, you can fight.
Hell, Obama learned that lesson pretty quick.
You see, he hasn't. He pulled a lot of lobbyists off of his staff. He's not putting any on. So he's going to definitely try to. He don't like being told he can't do something like that.
Yeah, and that's you know the thing that we're in this whole transition, you know, getting ready for his inaugural and so forth for when he actually starts running the country. It's
a plan that was the right thing to say.
Well, pretty much. But anyway, it's just, you know, there are things that I agree with and other things I don't agree with. And of course, all those who, you know, like, you know, the ones who lost with Hillary and they're all upset about that, you know, people just got to get over it. You know, we got a new commander-in-chief now. Let's try to work with it, okay? You know, just, you know, we just can't. You know, it's just it takes the country to do things too. You know, he's got a lot of crap that he has to try to fix that it was already broken.
And somebody does this, well, he's just going to do it. I said, well, so you can only do so much. Congress has got to go along with it, people.
Exactly.
And I said, you know, they're going to keep an eye on this guy because they don't want him. You know, the Republicans are doing really riding high and doing really well right now, so they ain't going to want him to go screw up. I said they're going to keep an eye on him as much as they can.
But here's the whole, this is the only hope that I possibly have for him being an okay president, is just what's going to happen when the Republicans say, all right, this is the way it's going to be, and Trump's going to say, no, exactly, it isn't.
Yeah, well, because,
you know, they would love to have, as soon as he steps out of line, they would love to have him impeached and have that idiot Pence running everything.
Yeah, but
I
don't think they'll be able to. He's made some pretty good friends lately. I don't know if he's buying people or you know what's funny about this guy is the brash part I knew of him, I just didn't like. Now I gotta be honest, since the election, with the exception of some stupid tweets in the last couple of days, he seemed to be a lot more humble and a lot more in touch with what was going on than everybody thought he was. But that doesn't mean anything because you don't know if that's an act. You don't know which part of this guy is an act or if it's all real and he's one way, but I notice when you see him at business settings, at dinners and stuff, he's not brash and rude. And what the biggest two things I think that contributed to Trump's success is, one, no one in any of his companies came out and said anything bad of him. And he definitely employs more Hispanics and blacks and women than Hillary Clinton ever did. So he had an up right off the bat. And when your CEOs won't talk about you or people you've let go and his two top people are women, it was a little different than the way the press was presenting him. And then his kids are tough to touch. Like, they're clean. There's no trouble with them. None of them are drug addicts. None of them are any trouble with the law. None of them are doing anything stupid. So if you looked at his family and his businesses, he looked different than the guy you've seen as the apprentice. So I think there's two Trumps. He may be splitzoid. I don't know. But there definitely seems to
Trump,
be two different guys.
Yeah, here's about Trump. He plays a caricature of himself. And
that's a good way of putting it.
He doesn't care about any of those voters. All those crazy conspiracy theorist people that thought he was one of them, those neo-Nazis. I mean, hell, when that little stupid neo-Nazi convention went on where only 200 people showed up and every paper in the world was like, oh, my God, this is the new America, these alt-right neo-Nazis. Trump ended up having to disavow them. And then those people were like, well, he's not really one of us. I mean, Trump didn't care about any of those people. He was a caricature playing a role. He wanted to win, and he won. He doesn't care about the people that got him there. He's there.
There's only two places I hold out a lot of hope for Trump. One, since he's got, you know, big investments in our country, I think he'll go for making money for the country. So I think economy-wise, we're going to see a nice increase. And like I told everybody, he said, oh, the stock market's going to crash. I said, I don't think it'll crash if he becomes president. And it didn't. It just started going up, which breaking records, in fact, which is just kind of scary. And then I like what he told OPEC today. OPEC yesterday said they're going to cut production. He said, that's fine. You want to try to hurt us as I'm taking the presidency? Then no money for y'all for 2 years. Now he wants to cut the Middle East out of it. No money for 2 years. So he's this guy.
Well, actually, if Trump wants to bring jobs back around here, he would hope that they cut production because, you know, if oil prices go back up, they'll get back out into Texas and North Dakota and shit.
Yeah, but he don't want oil prices going up because it hurts the economy in the long run. Keeping it around $2 an hour lets people travel, spend money, you know. And look, I don't want it to go up. I drive an F-150 with a 5.4 liter. That thing sucks gas. Like, don't get me wrong, people. I ain't hating on my truck. I love my truck. Even though it's got to go to the shop, I love my truck. But, buddy, you get that thing in a city, you better hope it's giving you 50. It's more like 12.
Oh, man, you're Ford. Man, you just got that thing and it's in the shop?
No, but yeah, no, I bought it used, though. It's a beautiful truck. When you see it, you'll love it. You know what? Remember the truck we rented and we dented when we went to the daiquiri shop?
Yeah.
It looks like that one. A little bit newer, but it looks like that one. Yeah, I'm going to pay it off, and after that, I'm going to probably get me something closer to 2012, 2014. I had to get something for work, so I had a rule. I was going to buy a 2010, and I said, yeah, and the first one of these SOBs that work for me scratches is going to be hell. So I bought one about 3 years off, and it's a 6 or 7, but it's a great truck. It's a beautiful truck. It had about 80,000 miles on when I got it. It's an XLT. It's pretty much loaded up. It drives better than my mom's $85,000 Cadillac. It rides better. It's faster. It's smoother. It's quieter. It's a great truck. But it sucks gas like you drinking a malt, man. I mean, a son of a bitch. Just you punch it on interstate at 80, just watch the needle start moving. You're like, wow.
Man, Ford's never been able to get decent mileage out of a big engine.
And I was going
to,
you know.
GM's always been able to get 20 miles a gallon in a truck with a big-ass V8. So is Dodge, but
yeah, my
Ford just don't care.
Best gas mileage my truck's gotten to date is 18.6 gallons. And that's cruise control, 80 miles, about 75 miles an hour on interstate. That was it. That's the best I've gotten so far. Sam's got the V6. He only gets a mile a gallon better than I do.
And we've got a 2000 Silverado with a little V8. It's got the 4.8. Dude, it'll get 21 or right at 20 on the highway going about 70, 75. I mean, it'll do it. Oh, this is truck talk on the UPR.
We're on Alien Truck Moves and Beyond. Sorry about that, guys. But oh, by the way, no, the reason I brought it up in the first place was I got a little bump in it, like a hesitation. I thought maybe my transmission. I was like, man, I don't get pissed because it said the rear input on it. Well, Ford did. And I think the damn, either my spouse, I don't know, it's something that's got a little acceleration problem, so it's going to the shop because I drive it. I'm not going to lie to y'all. It gets, one of the reasons it drinks so much gas is because I got a heavy-ass foot, and I like him. Woo! When I'm going down interstate. That truck, when you punch that truck just gets up. Just to put this in perspective, Sam's got a Mahindra tractor. We went in a big 7,000-pound trailer, so I loaded him up on my truck. I'm cruising 80 through the country with this thing strapped in the back of my truck. My truck don't even know it's back there, man. It's like, get the hell out of here. It didn't even wreck it. It wasn't even like pulling anything. It was crazy.
It's like pulling a wagon, right?
Yeah, it wasn't. I mean, it was like, what the hell? I didn't even realize it was back there. And my truck's got the tow package in it, too, so it's got the radiator.
Oh, nice.
And a little secret, ladies and gentlemen, y'all might Ford might not tell you. The 4.8 liter and the 5.4 liter have exactly the same horsepower, 310 horsepower, which is the same as the Nissan truck has. But when you have the tow package installed by Ford dealership on the 5.4 liter, they will bump your horsepower between 330 and 340 just by tweaking the computer. So, guys, you can add an additional 20 or 30 horsepower to your truck by tweaking the computer. The Ford dealer told me that because he said, oh, no. I said, 310, why did I get the same? He said, no, your truck's actually pulling about 3. He said when he tested it, it was pulling 328. He said it was probably originally set on 34. He said it probably just lost 12 horsepower.
Yeah, but that, here's the thing, though, Joe. The modular motor is a dog compared to the LS. I mean, the LS V8 are just, Chevy's got a better V8.
This thing will leave a Chevy in it. Dude, just to put this in perspective for you, I'm cruising down the interstate. It's like a week and a half, about a week after I buy this damn truck, right? Guy pulls up on the side of me in a new Duster. Beautiful car, man. Got the Magnum in. Boy comes down the road. He's got the 5.7 liter Hemi in the Dodge. So we're all cruising down the interstate. And the guy in the truck just punches it. So the Dodge dude, he punches. And I'm like, well, screw this. I probably left these some bitches. They couldn't even catch up with me. I was over 100 miles an hour before they even accelerate, man. They did. This truck got picked up like you wouldn't believe. Jason, it will slam you back in the seat. It's
Dude, that old Dodge with the Magnum 318 that I brought down last time I was in New Orleans, dude, that thing would smoke your little 5.4.
Oh, no, man. This truck would be easy 160. Easy. I've had it up to 135.
Welcome to the Car Wars.
I don't really buy Fords for speed because I like the Ford trucks for comfort. The four-door, you know, like with the Chevys and the Dodges, they rattle traps. But they usually are faster than the Fords. So this guy, whoever, when he bought this truck, he just, you know, because I guess he must have been towing a trailer or something originally, so he upped the power on the truck itself at once, like a beast. And it's got a special rear end in it. It's one of the reasons it had to be rebuilt. When I brought it in, the guy said, because it started humming, I said, dude, the truck ain't got like 60,000, 70,000 miles, why is the rear end humming? He's like, oh, no, and he explained it all to me and the way it worked and all. He said, no. So it runs really good. It's a great little running truck. Well, now it ain't, because apparently I've been whooping it too much, but so that's why it's going to the shop. But it runs great. I'm kind of, Sam gets furious at me. I'll be blowing by people. The other day we blew a guy in his beautiful brand new Chevy truck. He's cruising along. I punch it. He comes flying by us. Sam's like, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. I couldn't help myself. All of a sudden, yeah, whoop, whoop, there we go. It just rolls, but I think 160, because it feels like at about 135, you still got acceleration left, and you're not getting that hesitation yet. I notice most vehicles, and I can't say this for all vehicles, but most vehicles I've driven at high speeds, when they get close to their top end, they start to get like a little hesitation, like the car is kind of pushing itself. I don't know how to explain it, it's kind of pushing itself. But look, in all fairness, and I hate to say this, my little Toyota Corolla will do 120, and it's got four banging in it. About 117, actually, but still. That little bitch gets up and rolls when it's 260. It's a 2009. It's got 250,000 miles on it now.
Yeah, dude, but none of them could roll like my Integra, though. That little,
I love that look there. That has a great look.
That little Integra will go. It doesn't have a rev limiter. I mean, it bounces off. Well, it's got
like
a fuel cutoff.
That thing is like a pocket rocket, man. I'm not guys, you got this little car. It's like a little rocket. It just goes. It's standard. It just goes, man. It's because I mean the engine probably ain't got but 100 horsepower. The damn thing.
It had 130, but the speedometer is marked up to 140, and there's a little line at 146, and it'll gear out in fifth gear at 146. It'll go.
And it handles good too. It's a good little driving car. It's just one of them things. Every now and then you just get lucky and get one. Because I've had cars. Even with big motors in them, they're just raggedy pieces of crap. My mom got that fancy flappy paddle, sports edition Cadillac. She paid $85,000 for this car. And you know, Cadillac don't build V8s no more, right? They don't put them in
the car. Yeah, well, she's got that. What's she got? That big XTS or whatever it is.
Yeah, the one, the big sporty one with the high, all the big end packages, lower and high.
Yeah, but here's where GM gets you though, dude. They want what, like 50, 60 grand for that car? Probably got it for 40 something. But you can get that same engine and transmission in a 2011 Impala. I mean, that's GM for you.
The one she got, she paid $86,000 for it. And she knew the dealer and got a deal on it. The car was like 104 grand. You know why she got it, right? I told you what happened. You remember the gray Cadillac she had? She was having it serviced in the shop, and there was something wrong with the gas tank, so the guy was taking it down and the thing caught on fire in the shop. Burned the car up, the shop up. They got it on video. The guy sent it a video, dude. It was crazy. He was unhooking the tank, and it dropped, and the whole thing just rolled up in the flames. And it was like, so they had to give her, you know, how much, I don't know how much car was worth at the time, probably about $30,000. So they had to give her that, and they felt bad.
GM professional mechanic.
Yeah, so
GM
then
Goodwrench certified.
Then they felt bad because they burnt up one of her favorite all time cars. So then they gave her, like, another, when she decided to buy it, they said, okay, well, this is list price, this is what we're going to give it to you. And then they knocked 15 grand off the top of it. Originally, she got a Mercedes, but she got the Mercedes 480 convertible. But she didn't like it because it didn't have OnStar.
God, OnStar is such an archaic piece of crap.
And she loved that shit like you wouldn't believe it, like candy to her. I was like, okay, Mom, whatever. It's your car. You put whatever you want in. Don't get me wrong. It's a really pretty car. I don't like it. First off, I feel like I'm squished in it. Maybe Christina might feel good in it because she's a little bitty thing. But that car makes me feel claustrophobic.
104 grand sticker. I mean, come on, man. You could be rolling in an S550 for that much. I mean,
well,
a nice S550.
What killed me, Jason, the Mercedes, the first one, was only 76. And that was convertible, buddy. That was a nice car. And she just didn't go with the big engine. She went with I forgot what the hell it was, but it was a nice size.
It rains too much in New Orleans to own a convertible.
Oh, that car was beautiful, man. But it wasn't comfortable either. Mercedes like Cadillac. I remember the first Cadillacs when I used to drive them. They rode like luxury tanks, baby. You didn't even feel
luxury tanks. No.
Yeah, well, they were big and bulky, but they were smooth as a baby's butt. Today, these cars are like, they bounce you all over the place, knock you around. I mean, I got out of a car, felt like I was riding in an old pickup truck or something. It was jostling me around so much.
All right, look, y'all, I am driving around right now in an old 1981 Mercedes S-Class with an unkillable diesel engine in it. Yeah, it's kind of slow, but it's a good highway car. That car with bad shocks still rides better than an old Cadillac does.
Yeah, because those cars were designed to ride good, but the new ones ride rough. They ride hard. He's a guy. What do you think, Mike? Was a girl? Who's really shame? I'm sorry, just reading that. I know we got out of here, but we running.
Yeah, we kind of went off on a tangent there.
Yeah, we went off, and Christina said somebody that she's going to smack Renee around for not controlling us. But
man, we just need to like have a Top Gear show on.
Yeah. Well, actually,
of course, we couldn't call it Top Gear.
Actually, I don't know what else. We talked about adding something else. I don't know. We just expanding the repertoire of the station, trying to expand it out. Because we got a good mix these days. I'm just not sure. We need something. I just know what it is. Somebody will come along with something and sell me on it sooner or later. But
That's what we need, a ridiculous, irreverent car show.
Renee's promising me he's going to send me music, but he died. You don't love me. At least Aline sends me music, but Renee don't.
Oh, wow.
I feel abused.
Wow.
I know. I just feel used. Put away wet. What can I say?
Go get probed, will you?
But anyway, Renee, I'll let you take us out because you're the boss. We've just been giving you a hard time. Thanks, y'all. Thanks again for letting me on. Lee is going to be with you next week.
Yeah, Lee's going to be with us next week.
She'll be all sweet and nice. And Renee won't know how to act. Between me and Christina, he gets to meet me, so. It'll be like, wow, this is how the real world is. Okay, I got to think about this.
Yes, today we're going to talk about probing. And anyway, but I want to thank you guys for sitting in today. And
it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, we did touch on some aliens and UFO stuff somewhere in between cars and presidents. And
God knows what else was there. There was stuff in there for the first hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
So, got a little retarded, but
we always do that when you get a bunch of guys in there. That's what happens, right? So,
yep.
That's all right. But hey, catch us next week on Aliens, UFO, Beyond. And so this is Renee Chavez getting ready to sign off. And yes, I'll be hosting next week. So for sure, we're gonna have a great time. So we'll catch you next time. Have a great night, y'all. Bye bye.
Oh my gosh, I love this song!
You've been listening to your boss,
Taliban Joe.